Hello and welcome to the Innovation Forum podcast for Friday 9th of October with me, Ian Welsh. Earlier this week, I spoke with Janina Grabs at ETH Zurich and Sofia Caradenuto at the University of Victoria about their research into how commodity trader companies are influencing supply chain commitments and can be essential facilitators for brands to meet sustainability goals. That's coming up a little later. First up, though, is the usual roundup of some sustainable business news. US-based food and confectionery and pet care business Mars has announced that its entire palm oil supply chain has become deforestation-free, following a reduction in the number of mills the company sources from. The supplier base has contracted from 1,500 to a few hundred mills, Mars says, with an aim to reduce this to under 100 in 2021 and to fewer than 50 mills in 2022, all of which comply with the company's environmental and social requirements. Shorter, more transparent supply chains, of course, make it easier for the company to trace its supply. Mars is one of the many food businesses with a long-standing commitment to net zero deforestation by the end of 2020, made via the Consumer Goods Forum in 2010. Environmental groups have expressed repeated concerns that this target will not be met by virtually all the companies who had signed up to it. Another piece of research has highlighted the ongoing plastic pollution crisis. Australian government scientists analysed cores from the ocean floor, taken at remote locations off the southern coast of Australia, finding significant levels of plastic material in the sediment. They suggest that there could be 30 times more plastic on the ocean floor at depths up to 3 kilometres than floating at the surface. This sort of research keeps the pressure on consumer-facing businesses to be seen to do something about it. One of the latest examples is supermarket chain Aldi, which says it will remove all single-use plastic bags from its produce aisles in its UK and Ireland stores this year. Rather than simply replacing with single-use alternatives made from other materials, the chain will encourage shoppers to bring in their own bags or containers. They will also have the option to buy drawstring produce bags. Aldi UK and Ireland says that the move will remove 100 tonnes of hard-to-recycle plastic bags per year and is a key part of its strategy to halve its plastic use from 2018 to 2025. The role of financial institutions and the investment community in tackling deforestation is clear, but in a new report, forests NGO Global Canopy accuses some of the world's biggest investors of failing to adopt policies that stop damage to the Amazon in particular, through their backing of beef and soy supply chains. The group highlights the statement signed by 251 investors with $18 trillion in assets in September 2019 that urged companies to do what was necessary to halt Amazon deforestation. A year on, only a few of these financial institutions have introduced their own policies against deforestation, Global Canopy says. However, the Science Based Targets Initiative may be able to help with the launch of its framework and validation service for financial institutions. With input from the UN Global Compact, World Resources Institute, CDP and WWF, the new framework covers companies' direct operations, supply chains, and importantly, the impact of their portfolios. The network calls for investors to leverage their position as shareholders to insist on action by companies. Scope 1 and 2 emissions should come down by 4.2% each year at financial institutions that sign up to the framework and work to the pathway to keep global warming to no more than 1.5 Celsius. Innovation Forum's 2020 Future of Plastics Conference is rapidly approaching. It will be held via our interactive online platform over 3 days from the 20th to 22nd of October. Among the expert panellists will be representatives of Coca-Cola and European Partners, Dow Chemical Company, Anheuser-Busch InBev and Greenpeace. And the first week of coming November, we'll see Innovation Forum's Sustainable Landscapes and Commodities event. This will include a series of focused interactive workshops around an extended conference over 3 days from the 3rd to the 5th of November. Already signed up to take part are senior representatives from Sime Darby, April, Tate & Lyle, WWF, Burger King and the Consumer Goods Forum. All details are on innovationforum.co.uk and sign up before the 16th of October to save £75 on passes. The next in our autumn webinar series is coming up next week, when, on Tuesday the 13th of October, I'll be discussing the importance of better data in the apparel sector with the Economist Intelligence Unit and the US Cotton Protocol. The webinar will include exclusive insight from the Economist Intelligence Unit's new report into sustainability in the fashion sector. Sign up for free via the links in this week's newsletter or via the Innovation Forum website. A few days ago, I spoke with Dr. Janina Grabs, postdoctoral researcher at ETH Zurich, and Dr. Sofia Caradenuto, assistant professor at the University of Victoria, about their ongoing research into the role of traders as agents of sustainability governance in global food supply chains. We talked about how these businesses, big and small, can help and influence brand commitments and deforestation, and how the relationship between brands, traders, and growers is evolving. Let's start very quickly by some introductions. Sofia, can you introduce yourself quickly and then give a bit of context to your research?
Thank you, Ian. Yes, I'm Sophia Cairnudo, assistant professor at the University of Victoria. And prior to starting this position here in 2018, I worked for close to a decade as a sustainability consultant supporting governments and business, mostly in West Africa, to develop REDD+ programs and zero deforestation cocoa commitments. I'll hand it over to Yanina, who's going to introduce our research.
So my name is Yanina Grabs. I'm a postdoctoral researcher at ETH Zurich and incoming assistant professor of business and society at ESADA Business School. My research as a political scientist has long focused on private sustainability governance, so how businesses can take over rulemaking and implementation for more sustainability in their supply chains. And in the course of this research, Sophia and I have continuously focus more attention on traders who have emerged as key actors and links in terms of global value chain sustainability, as they are uniquely positioned to translate and implement sustainability commitments and action plans related to issues such as zero deforestation, all the way to living income improvements, and can be the boots on the ground to make these transformations happen.
Sophia, in your interim report, your draft report, you say that the role of trader companies has been under-researched. Why do you think this is? And I guess we're talking about some of the real big companies, the Cargills and the Olams of this world.
Yeah, so in the past, it's been mostly retailers and the big brands that have received a lot of attention for being the catalysts or change makers whose downstream demands kind of reverberate up the supply chain. It really depends on the supply chain, but in many cases, we're seeing that traders are less consumer facing. They're less prominent, also receive less attention from civil society. They just don't have the consumer facing brands that make people more aware of them. Maybe some of the biggest companies you've never heard of, like Olam and Cargill, are the traders and possibly becoming more familiar household names. But for the most part, a lot of people have never heard of these companies. One possibility explaining this might be that they've been put into this category of big ag or big agriculture without being looked at as actors with specific roles or specific advantages and potential challenges. What our research aims to do, though, is also go beyond these really big companies that have been less visible, but also look at their countless supply chain partners that can also be characterized as traders. We're at the early stages of this research. Part of it will be actually clarifying the definition of traders and how to bring further understanding to the different roles of traders throughout the supply chain. So not just the big guys, but also the smaller guys who often act as the first point of aggregation of some of these raw commodities.
It'll be interesting to see how these smaller traders, how they become more transparent. Because I mean, certainly there's been some civil society pushback against the bigger companies. I mean, a lot of the, particularly in soy, there's been quite a lot of talk about the big trading companies and their involvement in South America in particular. Yanina, how do you think that traders can help their customer companies meet their commitment?
In a lot of commodity value chains, especially agricultural commodities, traders are really sitting at the middle of these hourglass-shaped supply chains where we have a lot of smallholder producers or a lot of producers in general spread across the tropics who are producing a raw commodity that is then used in many products around the globe by many manufacturers and distributed again to millions of consumers. But traders are there in the middle who can consolidate the demand for sustainability and streamline it in order to make sure that there is no duplication of action and that the types of requirements, but also incentives that companies that have higher sustainability demands offer are actually passed down along the value chains. And so they're connected to a lot of the smallholder farmers. Many times they already have extension services and long-lasting relationships with farmers on the ground. They are uniquely positioned to understand the localized challenges that may result from these types of requirements and also innovative solutions on how to solve those challenges on a more case-by-case basis. Finally, it's also interesting that many traders trade not only in one commodity, but in several. And so especially in cases where there's very commodity-focused actions and groups that are organized sort of by palm oil or by coffee, there might be best practices that translate between commodities, but that are just siloed in these specific action fora, and the traders could also translate horizontally in addition to vertically.
Undoubtedly, many brands are making increasing commitments around transparency in their supply chains and also committing to engage with their ultimate grower suppliers. Is it simply that the traders are the obvious way for branded companies to really engage with their farmer suppliers? Do you want to answer that one, Sophia?
Yeah, so I think we all know that the majority of impacts from agriculture comes from land use chains. It comes from that first decision of how to establish a farm, whether that's causing deforestation, and also how to manage a farm. So that's where the majority of carbon emissions, that's where the majority of the unsustainable labor practices are taking place. So our hypothesis in this research is that because the traders are operating in closest proximity to these farmers, they play an important role in influencing behavior change, communicating and enforcing codes of conduct for production practices. Our research aims to determine not only how large multinational traders can meet their commitments, but especially how these smaller traders, often operating informally, are sometimes the only supply chain node that's actually visible to the farmer. What can we do? What support do these smaller upstream traders need in order to in turn support their suppliers or the smallholder producers in many cases, especially in cocoa, for example? Another element or another aspect of this research is that we all hear this common refrain in sustainability and labor commitments that many agri commodities are trying to eliminate the middlemen. So the understanding is that the more directly a company sources, like ideally directly from the farmer, the better the outcomes for the farmer, the better the outcomes for everyone. So we would really like to understand a bit better the role of these middlemen and the various traders along the supply chain, not simply assuming that eliminating them would make things better. Our hypothesis is that there's some unexploited potential of traders, both large and small, being the key agent that might transform business as usual to the more sustainable sourcing that we need. But Yanina can also explain a little more about some of the potential challenges or the principal agent dilemmas that arise just due to the inherent nature of the trader business.
Yanina, do you want to comment on that?
It's quite interesting in that the trader is now putting on these hats as sustainability implementers close to the ground still need to remember their primary mandate, right, which is to uphold this commercial relationship and also to make sure that they are ensuring that their sourcing base is going to be continuously supplying the quality product that their customers demand. Sometimes there might be conflicts of interest between the commercial mission of traders, both large and small, and this new role of being the sustainability implementer, especially if cases arise where, for instance, a good quality product is available, but sustainability guidelines have not been met. There might be reasons for traders to underplay these types of delays or issues in order to contain the business relationship. Also, these traders may have had long-standing business relationships with the farmers and continuously introducing new requirements that might endanger these business relationships might be quite uncomfortable for them, right? Especially if we're talking about these smaller middlemen that have built their business on the personalized relationships. We also would like to understand better how traders of all shapes and sizes are managing these dual expectations and can balance between them, between being the provider and deliverer of quality product, but also making sure that sustainability requirements are continuously met and production practices are upgraded accordingly.
I like the idea of a trader as sustainability implementer. So Sophia, turning back to you, given that, how would you characterize the commitments of traders themselves? I mean, many of the big companies have made significant progress, haven't they?
Yes, in some ways, I think we can argue that we're in a new era of sustainability sourcing practices, especially in global agriculture commodities. In the past, sustainability has been characterized mostly by corporations pronouncing voluntary sustainability measures for their own supply chains. This kind of replaces the third-party standard setters and certifiers that are independent from the firms that they seek to govern. We've moved into this new era of so-called own supply chain sustainability standards. We're also arguing that we may be going into another era that moves beyond that, which can be characterized by the Cocoa and Forest Initiative, which is the zero deforestation commitment of the cocoa industry. Now, this new commitment, the CFI, is unprecedented for two reasons. First, it's pre-competitive, so industry-wide approach where companies agree to work together to solve common sustainability challenges. And number two, this CFI is not only collecting businesses, but uniting those businesses with producer country governments to jointly regulate domestic land use change, for example. So there's a few unknowns about how this new approach to sustainability and sustainable sourcing will unfold, and whether it will be more effective in terms of reducing deforestation as compared to previous approaches. So to answer your question, we're seeing more commitment to transparency and sustainability in general from traders. Some ongoing research that I'm doing right now on the Cocoa and Forest Initiative, the cocoa industry's zero deforestation commitment, I'm seeing that the traders, the ones operating closer to the farmers upstream in the supply chain, are actually pronouncing more strict, more ambitious CFI commitments. This is under review at the moment, but using statistical analysis, we find that contrary to the literature that says it's these big brands and retailers that are doing the most or should be doing the most for sustainability, we're actually finding the players that are further upstream in the supply chain are doing more to publicly disclose their sustainability plans. They're pronouncing stricter timelines. They're reporting more detailed progress in their progress reports to the CFI. So we're actually seeing a lot of responsibility that's being placed on the traders, a lot of responsibility for implementing the sustainability commitments. And we've also seen this in the recently announced forest positive approach that was recently pronounced by the Consumer Goods Forum, explicitly states that traders will be a key player in implementing their forest positive commitments.
The Cocoa Forest Initiative, of course, is operating in Ghana and Cote d'Ivoire in West Africa. And it had actually been characterized as being slow progress. I was going to ask you about progress, but you're saying that you have seen definite concrete progress in the Cocoa and Forest Initiative.
No. So progress in this research that I'm doing isn't characterized by what's happening on the ground. We've actually seen that Ghana and Cote d'Ivoire in 2017 and 2018, right around when CFI was being pronounced, they had some of the highest increased rates of deforestation around the world. In terms of effectiveness, how the CFI is able to reduce deforestation, we haven't looked at that in this research. What I looked at was the corporate action plans and the corporate progress reports to CFI. So we're not actually seeing whether this links up to what's happening on the ground, but just based on what companies are saying they want to do and the level of detail that they're providing about what they say they want to do, we're seeing that the traders are definitely coming out strong compared to the retailers, for example. The CFI is now still in the pilot phase, and I think it remains to be seen how effective it is on the ground.
Well, I guess at least if companies are talking about what they want to do or seeing what they want to do, at least that is progress of a sort. Nina, I know that you have been leading the work in terms of coffee and palm oil. Can you give us a bit of a snapshot of the situation in coffee initially?
In coffee, this is where I focused much of my work previous to this current project and published a recent book on private sustainability governance as well. What we've seen is that traders has also, as Sophia mentioned, moved from being the implementers of third-party certification schemes toward defining a more active role for themselves as providers of sustainability services on the basis of their position on the ground, their knowledge and interaction with smallholder farmers. Oftentimes they buy directly from smallholder farmers and are thus also now redefining what they can do to help these smallholder farmers become profitable and have sustainable living incomes. And this comes in the context of a recurring coffee price crisis, which has been the last coffee price crisis has started around 2018 and is still ongoing. Now we're seeing a lot of new programs that are trying to work in addition to or complementing third-party certification standards, such as Olam's At Source, Well Cafe Way, Mercon Lift, and Neumann Cafe Group of Bloom program. And what these have in common is basically that traders are now showcasing that we can provide sustainability information on the ground, we can provide traceability, and also use our knowledge in order to provide more specialized extension services that is focusing on improving productivity and improving good agricultural practices on the ground. And Quite interestingly, some of these programs are even now moving laterally into new forms of service provision, such as credit extension, where there's these revolving credit programs that use international finance and the infrastructural networks that these traders have to provide microfinancing for smallholder coffee farmers.
What about palm oil?
Yeah, it's quite interesting because in each sector, the whole theme of the day is a little bit different, and thus traders' strategies are also adapted. So in palm oil, the key theme in the past 10 years has been zero deforestation commitments, NDPE, so no deforestation, no peat, no exploitation policies. And here again, we see that the midstream actors, so traders, as well as the vertically integrated companies that take over trading a lot of palm oil, but also have plantations on the ground, have been leading efforts in terms of operationalizing their NDPE policies, in terms of investing in satellite-based monitoring systems, and also in trying to both socialize the new requirements on the ground in doing workshops with mills and producers on the ground, and reacting to non-compliance, so cases of deforestation through their grievance programs. And my current research is looking into how effective these grievance mechanisms are in trying to change production practices on the ground through a combination of sort of carrots and sticks, trying to convince producers to stay in sustainable supply chains rather than moving towards the leakage market.
So Sophia, I wonder if you would like, interested to comment. We still talk about all these commodities in their silos. Are you seeing traders working and learning from their work in palm oil, for example, and using the lessons learned in their work on cocoa? Are you seeing cross-sectoral lessons being transferred?
It's great that you asked that, because just yesterday we received some good news from the Canadian Research Council on Social Sciences and Humanities that our grant application was successful, where we're going to have funding that will allow us to co-design a research agenda that looks to answer that question. What can we learn across commodities? We're looking specifically at cocoa, coffee, and palm oil. And these represent a range of land-based tree crop commodities where traders have played a significant role in the supply chain, both historically and presently. And we consider these commodities as front runners due to the significant growth and evolution of sustainable supply chain initiatives in recent years. So they're more likely to influence the sustainability measures from other agriculture commodities. At the same time, we see that although there's been a lot of advancement in sustainability pronouncements, there's still some persistent poverty-induced environmental and social degradation, especially in cocoa farming communities. So this justifies a closer look at what exactly companies are committing themselves to, and how does this compare to previous attempts at sustainability? We also want to look specifically at what do traders need to be successful? What are the enabling conditions that governments need to put in place? How will government action or inaction affect the ability of traders to implement their commitments? So more research is needed to understand those relationships between public and private actors, but also between traders and farmers. We hypothesize that traders will be key to scaling up sustainability actions. And a key part of that is also because they can learn across commodities, that many of these big traders are actually trading in palm, in cocoa, in coffee. Sometimes they're involved in many different commodities. And I think there is potential to have lessons from different commodities. It still remains a bit unknown how much knowledge sharing is happening.
And then in closing, Yanina, there's a trend towards ever greater supply chain transparency and companies wanting and needing to know where their ingredients and their products are coming. So bearing in mind the future of research that Sophia mentioned, how do you think that the relationship between buyers, traders and growers will evolve?
My hypothesis, or our hypothesis in this direction, is that as traders become more important actors, both in the relationship to the buyer, because they're the purveyor of transparent, traceable, sustainable product, but also in linking sustainable producers to the value chains that are able to pay sort of premium prices for it, that they'll become increasingly important and have a little bit more bargaining power as opposed to now. Now, in research, at least, what we used to usually talk about is that there's either buyer-driven value chains or producer-driven value chains. So either, and in most of these commodities, what we're seeing are lead firm or buyer-driven value chains, where it's really the manufacturer or the retailer that sets the conditions. And so as traders might becoming more important and more powerful, it's interesting also to then examine these types of relationships and power dynamics in the supply chain a little bit more closely. Specifically, what kind of impacts does this have on the ground on producers? Are producers, especially smallholder farmers, going to be consistently better off? And are they going to continue to have sufficient freedom in choosing their trading partners if they're also being given support by traders, which might be linked to exclusive market access? So how is this affecting dependencies and power relationships on the ground? But also, it's quite interesting to understand how sort of the relationships between buyers and traders is going to be shifting, and who will take on sort of the relative costs for sustainability action, as many of these transformations come with non-negligible expenses. And so the hope would be, of course, that those expenses are not all being pushed down to the producer, but that it's a shared responsibility that's taken up across the value chain.
Sure, because in many cases, the producers, the smallholder farmers, are the ones least able in the whole value chain to bear these costs. It's been fascinating hearing from you both about your work and your research. You were kind enough to share with me a working version of your paper. When should our listeners look out to see it published in full?
It's currently still in a revision phase, but we're hoping to conclude those soon. It's always difficult to know with the academic publishing clock, but hopefully in the beginning of the next year at the latest.
Great. Well, do look out for it, listeners. But for now, my thanks to Janina and Sophia for their time today.
Thanks, Ian. Great.
Thank you so much.
As ever, there's plenty more insight and analysis available on innovationforum.co.uk, including the usual audio interviews and podcasts. And do look out for a new piece of analysis on the EU's Single-Use Plastics Directive, published shortly. But that's all for now. I've been Ian Welsh, and I'll be back next week.